couple of quick things here, just in case you don't get a chance to read the headlines. No one's talking about this. And I found two or three stories today. It's very important that we understand what this is doing to not just the American worker, which is catastrophic, but the so-called millennials. The millennials are already burdened with enormous debt. And now what are they facing? Joblessness and an economic crisis, the likes of which they could never even imagine. What are they going to do? A lot of them will end up being homeless. Almost a third of young people have already lost their jobs. They're not going to get them back. These jobs, in many cases, are just gone. So remember that. Here's another issue that we can't really spend too much time on. It's the mask issue. Obama, 8 years, depleted the national stockpile of N95 masks and never bothered to replenish them. Well, neither did President Trump, who's had over 3 years and 4 months to do something. So that's that story. But never mind, because we, the United States, are going after masks that are destined for other countries. You heard the story about France last week. Now we've blocked millions of N95 masks made by 3M that were sold and headed to Canada. Good neighbor policy, huh? Trump, now here's the kicker. Trump says he is weighing, get ready for this, legal action against China over PPE hoarding as the international mask wars heat up. So Trump is talking about taking legal action against China for allegedly hoarding PPEs. This is getting to be crazy. Governor Cuomo of New York said the Tesla-made ventilators will not be ready in time for the pandemic apex in New York State or city. Governor Cuomo also asked Trump to shift the mission of the U.S. Naval Hospital ship Comfort to treat coronavirus patients. It was sent up there to take care of other surgical and medical issues, not coronavirus patients. What happens when you put coronavirus patients on a ship? What happens to the rest of the ship? Well, this evening, Trump granted Cuomo's request and said that the U.S. naval ship Comfort will now be open for business to take on all the coronavirus patients that it can take on. So say goodbye to the USS Comfort. Dr. Henry Nyman is back with us tonight as we begin another week of our nightly reports on the coronavirus pandemic. Hello, Henry. Welcome back. How was your weekend?
Hello, Jeff. It was a busy weekend.
Yes,
not
indeed.
Surprisingly. And there were some key developments that kind of hinted over the weekend and kind of solidified today, and it kind of highlights the fact that things are probably going to change in the as far as the virus is concerned. But what's going to happen in response to those changes is still pretty wide open. Basically, it looks like the curves are starting to bend and flatten out, both in New York as well as in Europe. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple different ways you can interpret this data. I think it'll be clearer in the next few days, actually. And it's a fairly dynamic situation. But the key question is whether the UK will be similar improvements to Spain, you know, on a par with Spain and Italy and probably France also. UK mm-hmm. was kind of slow to do the social distancing and but their numbers on deaths are somewhat down today. And if that's a real number, if they're really starting to decline and they're declining in line with Spain and Italy and France, mm-hmm. then that would indicate that the key driver on the reduction is really probably seasonal. And the virus is going to fade over the summer. You know, how quickly it'll fade, it may take you know, up until this summer before there'll be a dramatic drop, because at least in deaths, the deaths are uh-huh. a trailing indicator, and the hospital's loaded with patients who are on ventilators, and it's going to take a while for them to die. So the numbers that are new cases continue to increase, although not as quickly. And so the virus, you know, will continue to kill for quite some time, but the number of new cases may decline, and therefore kind of signal as Trump would say, light at the end of the tunnel. Although it's not really light at the end of the tunnel. It's strange. He keeps using that in his press conferences. That's his phrasing, and
that's his pet phrase, huh? Okay.
Yeah, that's really back from the Vietnam War days, and unfortunately, the light at the end of the tunnel ended up being kind of the headlights of a freight train that ended up running over the U.S. and they ended up leaving Vietnam in helicopters from
sure
the
did.
Roofs of the embassies. And it wasn't a good outcome. And unfortunately, Trump's light at the end of the tunnel is another, you know, mirage. It's not real. What his light at the end of the tunnel is a way that he can justify that, you know, getting everybody back to work and kind of return to normal and mm-hmm. figure that it's over. But that will ensure that the virus hangs around and will make a dramatic reappearance in the fall. And so
You're the first person. You're the first person to look at the apparent slight suppression of the curve as potentially illustrating a pullback of the viral activity in spring and summer. That this is the first time anyone I've seen anywhere mention it. So good.
Yeah. Everybody's talking about social distancing, but. If the UK goes down, they were very late to do social distancing. I mean, if that's the key driver, they should really lag, Spain and Italy and France and Germany even. So, because they all introduced this much earlier, the UK managed to, to get the royal family infected and the prime minister, by doing this. So it did have an immediate effect. It was, you know, not a good way to go, but it may reveal the fact that the seasonal factors are in play here and, at least contributing. I mean, it's a complex situation that the social distancing will have an effect.
Right.
And the season may have an effect and, the timing may coincide, and so these declines. I mean, if you recall, it's a late indicator, but it's something that you can kind of see fairly easily because a lot of groups kind of keep tabs on daily numbers and of cases and deaths. And a lot was made of the number of deaths in Italy when it got up to actually first. Noticed or got a lot of play when it got up to like 275, and then it got up to 475, and then it got up to 6-something, and then it got up to 900. And each time it went to those higher levels, it kind of did it a little bit bouncy, so it kind of leveled off, and then all of a sudden, it thought, well, maybe it's going down, and then it jumped up, and it leveled off, and thought, maybe it's going down, and it kept on jumping up. But it's now down to around 600, so it's off its peak. And Spain did the same thing. It went up to about 900, and it's in the 600s. And France, I'd mentioned, got over 1,000 last week. It got up to 1,100, 1,200, and it's down to 800. So all three of them are, about a couple hundred deaths per day off their peaks, and they all right. kind of did it at the same time.
Right.
And the UK had gotten up to almost 600, and it's at 400 today. So it's down
spread.
Off its peak, mm-hmm. too. Yeah, so they all kind of came down a little bit. It's hard to tell. The weekend, isn't quite as the same as during the week. And so we'll see if these numbers maintain. But if they maintain for a couple more days, then that would suggest that that UK going down is probably more seasonal than social distancing, because they hadn't really been doing that long enough to have the same type of effect that Spain and Italy had. So and then the fact that New York, who's been doing it for a little while, but they also kind of started to level off, and some of the other cities, I mean, they're going up. But they're not going up as dramatically as they were going up a week or two ago. So they've kind of slowed mm-hmm. down a little bit. Not so much that you could say it's over and out of the woods, because they are still going up. But there does seem to be this generalized, bending of the curve here. And I strongly suspect that there's a seasonal effect, and there's really no reason for there not to be a seasonal effect, because the virus basically doesn't do well in sunlight. And so in the summer, it not only gets warmer, but probably more importantly, there's more daylight. And so the sun would hit the virus more when it's outside during right. the summer and tend to inactivate it. And the people tend to go outside more, so they're not as likely to transmit it in buildings or other places. I mean, there isn't nearly as much as
they're sure selling a lot of UV lights on the internet all of a sudden to sterilize things, ultraviolet lights, small ones,
yeah,
for home use.
Well, that's what we use in the labs. I mean, the labs are basically equipped with regular lights and UV lights. And basically, when you're not using the hood where you basically do all the transfers of virus and cells, it switches to UV light. So it's got UV light on when not in use. And, that to basically kill anything that's on any of the surfaces there. And so, UV light is a way to inactivate the virus.
It's a tool.
As long as you aren't looking at the light, it's pretty safe, as long as you're pointing it away from you. And so I've got a feeling that, plan A is that the virus is going to start declining, and then plan B is going to be, the medical community will say, well, you really need to get some testing so you know where the virus is and who's got it and who doesn't have it and who has antibodies, or people have been infected and they got antibodies. They would be the first people to get back to work because, they are less likely to get the virus.
Right. They're talking about certificating survivors already, so
right,
that's
right.
in the news
but,
again.
But I got a feeling that Trump is just going to say, he sees the light, so to speak, and we're at the end of the tunnel, and get back to work, and don't worry, because we got drugs that can treat it. So he's going to rely on is arthritis and the malaria drug and say that that works. It's great. Not approved yet, but don't worry about it. We got lots of it. We got millions and millions of doses. And you get sick, and we got a cure. It's not a problem. Don't worry about it. It's not
okay, actually,
be a big deal.
A congresswoman today who had coronavirus said that her doctor put her on that hydroxychloroquine, and she felt better within 2 hours. And she's well now, and she thanked Trump for saving her life. So that the controversy is going to continue for quite some time. This issue about Boris Johnson, though, he is now in intensive care. People are giving him good wishes from all forms of government levels around the world. Trump, in his usual in sporadic incompetence, said, this is a quote, he described Boris Johnson in past tense, trying to send him good wishes. He described it. Here's what he said. I found him to be a fantastic person. Not I find him to be. I found him to be a fantastic. He was a great man. He said, I found him to be a fantastic person. And as only Trump does, he used the word again, a fantastic, warm, strong, smart guy. He loves his country. You see that. He fought like hell for his country. Past tense. But intensive care is big stuff. Really big stuff, said Donald.
Right. Yeah, Donald's only worried about one person in present tense. Everybody else doesn't matter. They're irrelevant. But anyway, I think he's talking about trying to treat him, and that would be his shining example if he responds. And I don't know. The difficulty is that's why they're called anecdotal results. You basically need to have a relatively large group, and some get the drug, some don't get the drug. They're kind of.
Well, they claim the guy in Europe was double blind on his testing. It's all I've read. And then today, Trump blocked, you saw it, I guess, Fauci from answering the hydroxychloroquine question at the briefing today. There was some question, and he didn't want Fauci to say anything. I don't know.
Well, that was, I think that was yesterday, but it was done on clips. But he got up there. I've answered this 15 times already. You don't have to answer it. It's already been answered. And but there was a big battle between Fauci and what's his name, the economic advisor
Navarro.
And apparently, rumor has it. Well, I don't know. It's in the media, but that Navarro brought these journal articles and threw them on the table and said, There's conclusive evidence that the drug works. And Fauci said, well, that's anecdotal evidence. Oh, no, this is a scientific study. And I mean, the difference is for it to be a legitimate study, it's got to have a reasonable number of people, and it's got to be double blind and show significance. And I don't think any of this study's really met those criteria. So as far as Fauci is concerned, you could have a small number of people and have a small effect, and you put it into a larger group, it kind of goes away. I mean, some studies have said they don't really see anything, and other studies say they see something, and they're all small, there's a whole lot of variables as to exactly who is going to be used on it. They're going to be used on the severe cases. I mean, a lot of people want to use it prophylactically. It's got issues with
supposedly there are some doctors doing that now.
Right. There are some that are doing it as a study. There are others that maybe are giving it to their patients, but I mean, there's the potential of arrhythmias, and there's the potential that, you know, those people are
not going to get
infected anyway, or, you know, 80% of the people that get infected, you know, don't have a whole lot more than you know, flu-like symptoms. And I mean, that's one of the issues with antivirals. I mean, for Tamiflu, you know, for influenza, it's recommended that you take it within 48 hours. And part of the reason it's got that 48 hours is, you know, that's where you got the best shot. I mean, the less virus there is, the more likely it is that the effect of the drug is going to be sufficient that you can measure a shorter course of illness. So you can say, you know, how many days after disease onset did it take until it resolved? And if you start the drug within the first 2 days, you can see the difference. If you go and you start the drug, you know, at day 5 or day 6 or something, number one, some people are going to get better a couple of days after that anyway. So getting statistics and saying they got better 2 days later because it was a drug, or if it was because, you know, they had already
so
been
many
sick
variables,
for 4 or 5 days.
A lot of variables.
Yeah, so because of that, the clinical trials were set up that way, and that's where they showed a difference, and that's what it says on the label, you know, to be taken within 48 hours. But the reality is there are those variables. Some people, you know, they can take it 4 or 5 days, and because they're not getting it better, and even though there's a lot of virus, this may be enough to tip the balance. Or on the other hand, it could be that they are getting a little bit better, and, you know, this would kind of move things along. But so the drug can work at different times. It really depends on the viral load and other factors.
Big story.
But the label says 2 days. Yeah.
Big story in Scientific American. I'd like to get this out there and get you to comment on it here before we move on. I'll just read the first couple of graphs. While the focus of the COVID-19 pandemic has been on respiratory problems and securing enough ventilators, doctors on the front lines are grappling with a new medical mystery. In addition to lung damage, many COVID-19 patients are also developing heart problems and dying of cardiac arrest. As more data comes in from China and Italy, as well as Washington State and New York, more cardiac experts are coming to believe the COVID-19 virus can infect the heart muscle. An initial study found cardiac damage in as many as 20% of the patients, leading to heart failure and death, even among those who show no signs of any respiratory distress. Now, that could change the way doctors and hospitals need to think about patients, particularly in the early stages of illness. It could also open up a second front in the battle against COVID-19 and the entire pandemic, with a need for new precautions in people with pre-existing heart problems, new demands for equipment, and ultimately new treatment plans for damaged hearts among those who survive. That's Scientific American, just out today.
Yeah, well, I heard an ER doctor today, and he was saying that they were seeing all types of clotting problems, and that these patients came in the emergency room, and there, you know, everything was clotting up, and they saw it in patient after patient. And so they had clotting as being a serious complication. And
not good.
And so they had all these blood clots. They were clogging up the lines. It was just a mess, and it was just one after the other. So, the virus is new. And, you know, it's got this polybasic cleavage site. So that is going to allow the virus to get into more cell types that have this purine protease. And that could account for, you know, more cardiac issues. It could I don't know, one way or another, I'm not sure exactly how, do something with the clotting and potentially do, you know, neurological issues. It's just the virus can get around a lot more than normal. And it's somewhat akin to, you know, high path H5N1 that, you know, without the polybasic cleavage site, the birds basically just get flu-like symptoms. You know, they kind of sneeze and their egg production might be down a little bit, but they don't die. Whereas if they have the polybasic cleavage site, they go and they, you know, get all their organs attacked, and, you know, that's almost always fatal, and it's just a matter of time, and the whole flock goes. So this may have some similarities, where it can attack different organs that cause different problems, and then there's probably some differences with the virus that, you know, as it turned out, a lot of sequences came out today, and I didn't send you as many articles. I've been doing sequences all day, and you know, it's pretty clear that a lot of the problems that are out there, as far as, you know, the issues in Europe and the issues in New York, are really related to this Italian version of the virus. And that is, you know, they came out with, I think 14 sequences came out last night, and another 20 came out today, and I haven't even gone through all of them. But I think I've gone through about 25 now, and 24 out of the 25, there's only been one that wasn't the Italian strain. And so New York is just overrun with this Italian strain. And it's not limited near New York. I mean, one surprise that I found was three sequences came out from Alaska, and all three of them were the Italian strain. And it's in a number of different states. The CDC finally released sequences, which, yeah, I really don't know what's going on with the CDC. It's just kind of bizarre. I mean, they do a lot of sequencing on influenza, and they typically come out with, you know, for flu, each season they'll come out with 20, 30 sequences, and then a few weeks later they'll come out with 20, 30 other ones. And they're taken from all over the country, and you can kind of get an idea of what in general is out there and if anything unusual is happening in one region or the other. And as far as SARS-CoV-2, they started out pretty quick. I mean, especially when the first cases in the U.S., they released the first five, you know, like within days, as in 1 or 2 days after it was confirmed. So the cases were confirmed. They came out with a case in Seattle, and then they did the one in Chicago, and then it was Los Angeles, and then it was Orange County, and then it was Phoenix. And those five just came out bing, 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 bing. I mean, it was really, as soon as it was confirmed, you could start looking to see if the sequence was available, and within a couple of days, there it was. And then they kind of stopped. You know, there were virtually no sequences coming out by the CDC. There were different, you know, university labs mostly that were kind of doing the cases nearby. There was that flu study up in Seattle, and they literally did hundreds of sequences now. And then UCSF was doing some sequences up in Northern California. NYU was doing some sequences in New York. Yale was doing some in Connecticut. Then there was another local series that was happening in Utah, and some other ones in Wisconsin. So there were areas that were concentrated in those particular regions, nearby cases, or cases at the medical center that had a sequencing lab associated with it. But the CDC didn't do much. And then they just came out with a series today. And that gave a little bit of a feel for what was going on around the country. Unfortunately, they didn't come out with a big number. I mean, I think they came out with maybe 20 sequences, but they were kind of right. scattered around. So mm-hmm. they just had two or three in each one. But it did kind of highlight the fact that this Italian strain in New York is dramatic, because the CDC sequences, you know, they did have the Italian sequences, but it wasn't that most of them were the Italian sequence. They had a couple sequences in Georgia which were virtually identical to the sequences in Chicago. So I don't know what that connection was, but it was basically the same virus down there. And there were some more that had the ORF8, and there were other ones that had the kind of sequence from Iran. And then they did have some Italian sequences. They only did one in Florida, and that was the Italian sequence. And they had a few more that were the Italian. I can't remember exactly where they were, but it really highlighted the fact that some places, particularly on the East Coast, I think, are loaded with this Italian sequence. I think Rhode Island had it, and so there's probably going to be some differences in how that virus presents also, because it seems to be very aggressive, and that's why Europe had the problems it did. That's why, you know, I'm virtually positive that's what Boris Johnson has. And that's why the deaths were so high in Italy as well
as
Spain.
He's gone down very quickly. You're right.
Yeah, and England has it. I mean, quite mm-hmm. a few sequences have come out of Europe. There's so many I haven't really gone through all of them yet. But Spain has the Italian sequence, and France has it, and England has it. And a lot of, you know, countries that did not have any reported cases prior to, you know, a couple of months ago when things started to take off, a month and a half ago. They've all got the Italian sequence. So the Italian sequence is in Africa, it's in South America, and it's in India. So there's going to be some serious issues with this virus because it is so widespread. And
I'm still worried about what you said earlier about the clotting being a common observation by these attending physicians. That's not good.
Yeah, and there wasn't like it was one patient. He said that, you know, it was just patient after patient was having these clotting issues.
Not
and,
good.
And you know, I can't remember where. I think he was from New York, but I'll have to look and see if I can find that clip again. But if he was in New York, then, you know, that if he had multiple patients, I'm sure it was the it was the Italian strain, because it's you know, 90-some-odd% of the cases, the sequences that have come out of New York. And there have been, you know, quite a few of them now. Yale did 4 of them, and then a lot came from NYU. They've done about 70 now. I haven't looked at all of them. But out of those 70, there's only about 4 or 5 or 6 that are not the Italian strain. So so there are going to be those types of issues. You know, back to the U.S., just, you know, as an update, the several states are getting up more in the New York range. New Jersey is, you know, they had 3,500 cases today, including 86 deaths. And Michigan has moved up. They had 1,500 cases today and 110 deaths. And Louisiana had 1,800 cases today and 35 deaths. And Massachusetts had 1,300 cases today. Florida had almost 1,300. Pennsylvania had 1,500. So, you know, these top states are still generating a lot of cases on a daily basis. And those cases are creeping up. I mean, Michigan had 110, and apparently there's a high frequency in patients of color, and whether that's because they're out and about more, because they're basically in, you know, these essential services, so they're in the grocery stores or
this is interesting.
Yeah, so it was high in Michigan, and it was high in Chicago, and it was high in Louisiana. You know, those there's some data on that, but most of the states don't really break it out by race. But all three of them had much higher. I think they focused on the deaths. What percentage of the deaths?
Right.
And what percent
they should break
were
it down.
Area.
It's relevant. It's a relevant trend here.
In Michigan, I don't know. I just saw it and I didn't write it down. But it was something like they were 30% of the cases or 30% of the population in, I guess, the Detroit area, but they were 70% of the deaths.
And, oh, my. Well, that's relevant.
And it was a big number in Louisiana also, as far as how many persons of color were dying. Mm-hmm. And so they said there were a bunch of factors, and some of the factors could have just been overall health. Some of it was that they didn't think that black people got COVID, so they just weren't thinking in those terms. I mean, the people that did have it, so they might have gone and sought treatment on the later side. But in any event, the numbers are still up, so it's not like it's going away anytime soon. But I think that this bending in New York may be signaling that it's going to start bending in some of the others, and so they won't get into the you know, critical situation where they're running out of PPEs and ventilators, and it'll kind of level off at a level that's still manageable, but it'll probably, you know, continue for a long time period. And then the question's going to be, well, what do you do next? I mean, the news
That's
conferences
right.
don't
That's right.
don't give a lot of information on anything on those lines. They basically say, well, we shipped X amount of this and X amount of that, and we're doing a great job, and everybody's happy, and it's under control, and da 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 da. And can see the light at the end of the tunnel. I mean, the news conferences are a little bit hard to watch. He says the same thing over and over and over again, you know, within minutes. And then it's exactly the same thing he said.
He does have a limited vocabulary, too.
It's exactly what he said the day before and the day before and the day before. So it's the same phrases multiple times in a given day, and then it's not a new phrase. And so there isn't a whole lot of new news there. And there's not a whole lot of, you know, what's the plan? You know, the light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, the plan, Henry, the last plan I heard from them was Friday or Saturday. I think it was Friday. The Surgeon General and who else was it? Fauci said the next 2 weeks are going to be the most gruesome in your life or something like that. That's a plan?
Well, Well, that can still happen. I mean, they're talking about deaths. Like I said, the deaths are a trailing indicator. So there's all these people that basically were being identified in the last month or probably the last couple of weeks in particular that were identified, went into the hospital, and a lot are on ventilators or getting ready to go on ventilators, and a lot of those are going to end up dying, and a lot are probably going to die in the next couple of months or weeks. Mm-hmm. So the number of deaths is going to be high, but you know, when they're looking at these curves, they're not just looking at the deaths because that's kind of a trailing indicator. They're looking at how many new patients they have on a given day, and are the number of new patients leveling off or going down. And so even after the new patients goes down, the number of deaths will continue to be plateaued at a high level or go down slowly. And so as far as how many people end up dying, I mean, there's all these stories where, you know, the funeral homes are full and they're backed up and, you know, the morgue is full and their bodies are in these refrigerated trucks. And that's, I mean, New York is leveling off at 600 deaths a day, which is, you know, pretty close to their all-time, but the all-time high was 630. So there were 599 today, and I mean that's the example of leveling off. And I think yesterday it was close
to 600. Well, like you say, we'll know a lot more in the next week or two. I think you're right. I think you're correct.
Yeah, I don't even think it'll take that long. I think we'll know in the next several days, because if the UK is flat or goes down, even though they didn't do that much separation and closing things down, then that would indicate that it's a seasonal effect. The numbers are going to start dropping, even if you didn't do a whole lot of social distancing. And the ones that did do the social distancing, you know, they don't have their prime minister in the hospital, so you know it did have an effect, and they had gone higher, so they had probably more serious outbreaks, especially Italy, and they were at the high level for quite a while, so the season is probably helping things out, but that's going to create a really dicey situation because
people relax. Yeah.
Yeah.
They'll relax.
Then if people relax, the virus will be hanging around, even in the summer. You know, it'll go down, but it won't necessarily go down to zero. And then in the fall, then what are they going to do in the fall? You know, it's kind of like, are kids going back to school? And there'll be a lot of, you know, people pushing to kind of get back to normal. So you got potentially kids going back to school. Are they going to start playing football? And are they going to, you know, all the schools start with their high school and college sports? And then you have these stadiums full of people. And that, you know, makes it pretty easy for the virus to start spreading by fall. You know, whether there's going to be a therapeutic agent that's got some, you know, demonstrated efficacy. I mean, there may be. I mean, that it's easier to do that type of result. You know, there's certainly plenty of patients. And so they get a feel for how effective various antivirals are in a couple of months. And so that could conceivably be ready by the fall.
Let me say one other thing.
Is going to take longer than that. But
yes,
but how
yes.
effective any of these are going to be? I mean, you can have it on a trial. So it's effective as in it's better than nothing. But it doesn't mean that, you know, there's going to be an instantaneous cure. You know,
We have a vacuum in the leadership department here. And no one would be happier than Donald J. Trump to talk about things going back to normal, when in point of fact, he should be rebuilding the national reserves of all health products, especially masks, especially PPEs.
He should be ordering
a number of companies to be making these right now, the way through the summer.
But the whole thing with the mask, that just seems to be crazy, you know. It's not that hard to make a mask. It's not a complicated design. It's not materials that are in short
supply. But he won't order it done. He just ordered 3M to make them last Friday. One company.
I know. And it's got, you know, it's got to be X million a month or something.
Right.
And I think they'll do that. I mean, the fact that it was an issue is what's so amazing, not the fact that they're going to fix it.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
The fixing it should have been fixed and a long time ago. And you know, the results in the spring certainly is a red flag for what might be coming in the fall. And you know, there'll be enough talk about that, especially if it goes down now. I mean, if it does really drop in the summer, that's a virtual guarantee that it'll be back in the fall because it's just going into a seasonal pattern. And uh-huh. There's so much virus out there that it's hard to believe that it's going to disappear, even in the northern hemisphere, over the summer. And it's all over. I mean, it's in South America, it's in Africa, and it's Australia. So there's plenty of locations in the southern hemisphere where it you know, would not be susceptible to seasonal issues.
Right.
There'll be lots
right.
of, there'll
well,
be
we'll,
lots
we'll
of
watch.
Sunlight.
Watch
and
Australia.
I mean, there
yeah.
lots of a lack of sunlight, I should say, you know, over the next several months. And so there'll be plenty of virus around. And there's so much of it in the northern hemisphere right now, uh-huh. in so many different countries and so many different situations that it seems unlikely that it's going to kind of just disappear. It might just be knocked down. And a lot of countries are just going to try to get back to normal, you know, over the summer. You know, they might do it gradually, but, you know, by fall, there's no telling. There is telling. There's really no reason not to expect this to follow patterns similar to swine flu or similar to the 1918 pandemic. You know, the level, you can argue about how severe it's going to be, but the fact that it is likely to come back in the fall is very high, and the likelihood that it'll be worse than it was in the spring because it was just kind of getting introduced. And we've already had one version that kind of took over. This Italian version is certainly, you know, the right. dominant species in Europe, and I'm pretty sure it's the dominant species in South America and Africa, and it's got a big foothold in Australia, and it's all over the northern hemisphere now. So, because I think that's what the problem is with, you know, Hong Kong and Japan are kind of talking about these resurgences, and they haven't really seen the Italian strain previously. So this is kind of a new and somewhat more aggressive strain. And so some of the measures that they took with the earlier one may have worked significantly better than those measures against this virus, which seems to be more virulent. And all the other things about the CDC sequences, they seem to show a lot more mixtures. And so I'm not sure if they use a somewhat different criteria than some of these other local labs, and when they're calling, you know, what percentage has to be a mixture to call it a mixture as opposed to just calling it the dominant species. And I've got a feeling that the CDC pays more attention to the mixtures, and that's what's floating around. There's been so much virus out there that a lot of these patients have more than one virus there, and they're, you know, ripe for recombination and rapid evolution. And that's why I think that, you know, there's a good chance that whatever emerges in the fall may very well be able to infect people that were infected in the spring. So even if you got your certificate, these viruses don't know how to read. So, you know,
they've
you can
had
wave
so
your
many people in China
and do whatever
reinfected.
You want. And then it'll just it might be an invitation, because if there's this antibody enhancement, the uh-huh. you know, the fact that you've got antibodies against one version, and there's another version that's circulating. There's some precedent for that actually making the second version easier to get in. It basically uses the antibody to, as an entry to get into the cell. So there's several different reasons why the fall would be worse than the spring. And I have a feeling that the light at the end of the tunnel will be a key driving force.
Yeah, I'm afraid you're right. I'm very concerned about this clotting in light of the heart issue in the Scientific American article. That's a bad sign.
Yeah, I'll try to get a little bit more, but this guy was, he was in the emergency room, and, he didn't say, oh, we got this really weird case. You know, he said it was everybody, it was just one right after the other. And I'm almost positive he's in New York. I'll see if I can dig out that clip and find out exactly where he was.
Thanks very much.
And I'll go from there. Okay.
Okay, Henry. Thank you. Talk to you tomorrow. Yeah. Good night. Dr. Henry Nyman, Ph.D., and we'll be right back with you in 21 hours. Be safe, be careful, and we'll talk soon.